Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Can I get a podcast on Saturday, August 4th, 28 days before college football officially kicks off in week one? Jeffrey Cooperstein alongside my buddy Chris Gross. Chris, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. Good to be here with you.
Good to be here. Great to see you today. We have a special treat for you today. Instead of doing our normal two-segment format, we have one format that we want to go to because one of my good friends, Grant, texted me this morning. We're talking about Johnny Manziel's CFL debut last night, which didn't go well if you didn't see. He threw four interceptions in the Montreal Alouettes loss. And Chris and I got to talking, and we were debating who our top five favorite college quarterbacks were in our lifetimes.
And here's the way. I don't know how you went about your list. We went very vague instructions. I based mine off of two factors. One, how good they were, but also just from my personal bias, my personal perspective. Obviously, skill takes a lot into it, but also how fun they were to watch also is how I kind of valued them into my top five rankings.
That's basically what I did. And then obviously I picked some that have local ties and some that don't. And I think, I guarantee you we have at least one crossover on our list.
I will put it out here. I bet we have three. Are the same.
Okay.
I'll say we have three that are the same. So Jeffrey, I'll start us out.
All right.
And my number five, I put the man we're talking about, Johnny Manziel. And the reason I put Manziel is, first of all, making history. First freshman ever to win the Heisman. But he's got the numbers. You'll notice a big thing with a lot of guys on my list are just the all-around ability, not just the standing back and throwing. I think a good college quarterback where you're playing at a lower level, you've got to be able to command the passing game, but be able to move with your feet as well. And that was one thing Johnny Manziel excelled at. We saw a little bit of it in the game last night where you evade a couple tackles, and it was easier in college to, once you made those moves, to either get a pass off or do it on your own with your feet. And that was something that he was just so good at. There was nobody at that time who was more fun to watch in college football than Johnny Manziel.
Johnny made me not hate Texas A&M for two seasons.
He was transcendent in the way that, and this was right at the peak of kind of his popularity, right before things got crazy and he became annoying. He was like, he was on the national stage.
Every time.
Yeah.
My number five, not a transcendent quarterback, but one of the best, I think, to ever play college football, and that's Sam Bradford from Oklahoma. Sam Bradford is one of the purest passers I have ever seen play the college game. That run in 2008 when OU was absolutely tearing through the Big 12, they had like five straight games of scoring 60 points or more. I don't think that's ever been done before, and I don't think that's going to happen again. Sam Bradford won the Heisman that year. He was hampered by a few shoulder injuries, but dude, he could sling the rock better than anyone almost pretty much ever.
Yeah, that was one thing you knew you could count on with him. And sadly, that's been the story of his career post-college as well, as the injuries. That's always been something that's hampered him. But you were right, man. He was, you know, a lot of these guys on the list are, you know, going into a game, you've got a really good shot at winning, and you've got a shot at blowing out the other team. And that was one thing you never doubted about those Oklahoma teams with Sam Bradford.
You knew you were scoring 50. It
yes.
was a matter of whether the other team would score less.
So there are number fives. Let's move on to number four. Why don't you give me your number four?
My number four is Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow won the Heisman, two national championships, and a Sugar Bowl. Perhaps the most accomplished quarterback of our era. He wasn't the best passer in the world, but he was a big physical presence, fantastic runner, ran through everybody. And it may be really cliche to say this, dude, but he was the leader. He was the leader. Everyone followed behind him. He might have been corny, but dude, he won, and he just won flat out.
Absolutely, you can criticize Tim Tebow. He's received a lot of criticism, but that's one thing you can't say about Tim Tebow is that he knows the way of commanding other players and just being that presence. You're right about that. I actually, let's talk about Tim Tebow since he's here. Our first crossover, I have Tim Tebow number two on my list just because he likely will go down as a lot of people as the best pure college football player they've ever seen. because the passing, the running, dude, he threw 16 interceptions in 4 years in college.
Think about that. In an Urban Meyer led offense where he loves to spread it out and throw it.
And that's the other thing, too, where just that pairing between Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow.
And Aaron Hernandez.
Yes. And who else? Riley Cooper was Percy on Harvin. Those teams, too. But yeah, the ability to command the offense and the ability to score through the air and on the ground, that's why he's my number two.
Man, I really hope to see Tim Tebow make the majors.
Dude, he would have this year.
Yeah, I think he would have been a September call-up if he didn't get hurt this year.
Yeah, that would have been interesting to see and something that I think a lot of people were real down on back whenever he first signed. I guess it was last season when he signed with the Mets. So Tim Tebow's my number two, but my number four is Marcus Mariota. And the reason I have him on this list, again, you go to the all-around ability as a football player. As good as he was as a passer, dude, he was so fast.
He was a really fast quarterback. Those Oregon offenses were so fun.
They were unbelievable. Like, just think back. Like, when you think Oregon right now, what I think of is you've got the flashy uniforms and the Hawaiian quarterback who's going to lead them to victories.
It's a shame Oregon can never get it done, though.
I know. And they were right there on the doorstep. Eventually couldn't make it past another Urban Meyer team in Ohio State. But Oregon offense under Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota was just a sight to behold. And again, it goes to how quick and how evasive Marcus Mariota was as a runner to complement his game as a passer. So that's my number four. Who do you have at number three?
My number three is Johnny. So there's our second crossover. Like I said earlier, I have no love lost for Texas A&M. But I'm watching Texas A&M every Saturday when Johnny was playing. He was so electrifying in his small stature, so fun to watch. That game against Alabama is one of the most memorable games of my lifetime, certainly, and maybe of college football history, when he went into Tuscaloosa and beat the Crimson Tide.
And it was one of the bowl games, I believe it was against Duke, when I can't remember how far they were down, but when he had that comeback, and it was in classic Johnny fashion, where you moved around defenders. He did it with his feet as well. He was just, I don't know if we'll ever see another guy, and you take it with what he did on the field combined with just his star power off the field, which really began to grow during his time in school. I don't know if we'll ever have another player capture that kind of essence, both on the field and off, that Johnny Manziel did it during his time at Texas A&M.
And I thought that his persona was so cool back in the day before I found out all these problems he had.
I know.
When he threw a touchdown and he would signal the money sign. Man, that was really cool. I wish Johnny Manziel played for Texas, which he wanted to, by the way, but Mack Brown recruited him as a safety, so shout out to you, Mack Brown.
Well, we did see last night, he made a couple of nice tackles because of the interceptions.
He did,
he
had a very rough CFL debut, which is a league I think he can actually thrive in because it's a wider field and a longer field, and the receivers are all in motion.
Yeah, and just real quick on that, dude had like 4 days of practice.
Yeah, he got traded. And
they're the worst team in the CFL.
And they don't speak English in Montreal. I'm kidding. They do. But
so he just had a lot working against him.
And it was against his former team, so they knew him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is one of the better teams.
Yeah, right. He was set up for failure.
Literally everything working against him. I say, if you're hoping for a Johnny Manziel comeback, don't sweat this one. Move on. We'll watch the next one. But we're talking about our Jeffrey and I here on Can I Get a Podcast, our top five college quarterbacks that we watched. We're not going back in time to people from back from the 80s, whoever. Even for me, early 2000s, for guys that I didn't watch and remember. But number three for me, another guy I know that will be on your list is Vince Young. Another guy who came in and was just transcendent in the way he was able to set records. First guy in college football history to pass for 3,000 yards and rush for 1,000.
Vince changed how college offenses were ran.
Absolutely.
He was the first true dual threat quarterback. Dude, he's running a sub 4.5 at 6'5", 230. And he had a weird release point with his throw, but it worked. And, dude, Texas moved the ball down the field unlike anyone else did. And that's a big reason why they won the national championship, which his legacy was cemented with 467 total yards in that game against USC. I don't think you're ever going to see another Vince again.
No.
I'm just going to say that right now. And I don't think it exists.
I think part of it, too, is like you said, because of the way he changed the game. Really the first guy to step in and be able to be as masterful as a passer as he was and be able to move. You just think about it. At the end of the national championship game, that winning touchdown, him sneaking in on the end zone. I mean, that perfectly encapsulates who Vince Young was as a college football player. And he was another guy, as some of the guys we've talked about on this list, as they were so much fun, so good in college, and they just couldn't make that next step in the NFL. And part of that, Vince Young went to a really bad situation, to a coach with Jeff Fisher, who he didn't get along with. But just as a pure college football quarterback, it's hard to... There are guys who, clearly on my list, you'll see, it's hard to get much better, though, than Vince Young.
And Vince didn't win a Heisman because Reggie Bush beat him out for it.
Yes, that's true.
Larceny.
Does he get it now since the Heisman was taken away?
I think they just stripped it from Reggie, and it's back at the downtown New York Athletic Club.
So that's through three. Did you give your number three?
I did. My number three was Johnny.
All right, and who's your number two?
My number two is Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson just graduated from the University of Louisville. He's now with the Ravens. He was as close to Vince Young, who I'm just going to give it away, was my number one. He is as close to Vince Young as there has been. He was so fast and so dynamic that it was almost unfair that he was playing in the American.
Yes.
And my favorite little fact about Lamar Jackson is that he wore a Florida Gators backpack to his commitment ceremony when he committed to Louisville.
No way.
Yeah. He walked into his commitment ceremony with a Florida Gators backpack on.
Just to be a troll?
I guess so. I mean, because it was between Louisville and Florida, and he chose Louisville. But no, and the crazy thing about Lamar and Johnny, they both won the Heisman. The year after they won the Heisman, they both had better seasons statistically than their Heisman years, and they both didn't win it. I don't know if that's just because they don't want to have multiple Heisman winners or if they just wanted to pick someone else, but both of those guys had better years the following year.
And I wanted to put Lamar Jackson on my list, and I don't know if any part of it was just because of recency bias, just because we'd seen him playing over the last 2 years. He probably would have been 6 or 7 if we extended our lists. But just think back to the end of his Heisman campaign. He kind of backed his way into a Heisman.
He won it by default. There's no doubt about that. And, but I think the way that Lamar Jackson played, it was so fun to watch. You turned on Louisville football to go watch Lamar Jackson.
That's another thing, too, where you took a team like that and who was known as a basketball school and made it a football team that you wanted to watch. And again, one of the reasons I strongly consider Lamar Jackson is I just like college quarterbacks who can pass, who can run, who can do it whatever way they want. And so I had a strong bias towards Lamar Jackson. Unfortunately, he didn't make his way into my top five. My number two, Tim Tebow. We already talked about him. One of the best all-around college football players we will see in any position throughout the years. Man, that 16 interceptions in 4 years just blows my mind.
And he was only a starter for 3 seasons. He was the backup to Chris Leak when they won the national championship.
Yeah, still three. In 2006. But three still, seasons as a starter is impressive.
No, it was... Tebow was special.
And a four-year guy. That's really impressive. So, Tim Tebow, my number two. Jeffrey, who is your number one college quarterback?
Man, I said it earlier. It's Vince Young.
Yeah.
And I think, dude, it's by a lot. Especially because I'm a Texas fan. I think Vince truly cemented my love for Texas. My dad will curse Vince Young till the day he dies because he won his national championship the year before the Gators won it.
Yeah.
And he thinks that's why I picked Texas. So he doesn't like Vince Young very much. Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
I think he will listen.
You think so?
I think he's a routine listener.
That's good. Chuck, friend of the show. Man, Vince was just so fun. Every Saturday, I was sitting there as a little fourth grader. When's Vince Young coming on? When's Vince Young coming on? And when my mom would make us go do errands during the game, I got really mad. And I would stay in the car and just listen to Craig Way and listen to these ridiculous plays that Vince Young was doing. The one that sticks out to me the most is Vince had a 3rd and 30 against Oklahoma State, one of many comebacks they had against Oklahoma State. He goes back and then he scrambles and gets like 45 yards on a 3rd and 30 to extend the drive and basically push Texas towards the national championship. They weren't going to lose that year with Vince Young no matter what.
Like I said, Vince Young, very good college quarterback. He came in at number 3 on my list. I will say, is it fair to say there was a little bias in your number 1 selection here?
Without a doubt, but I even think unbiased, if you ask other people, they would say Vince is the
best. I agree. My number 1, complete bias, Andy Dalton. And let me tell you why. Andy Dalton single-handedly put TCU in the Big 12. He was such a good quarterback for the Horned Frogs for 4 years. He improved every year, capping it off with the undefeated season. Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. You win that game. Without that season, TCU is still piddling away in a Group of Five conference. And this, again, goes to just my personal bias. That was really when I was introduced to TCU football. Dude, I was raised as a Michigan State fan because that's where my dad went to school. And then I started looking at colleges for myself and, dude, people knew about TCU because of the football team.
Dude, that's a really good point. I never thought of it that way. TCU they were in Conference USA. They were in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
You used to be able to go to TCU games whenever you wanted because tickets were so cheap. Now you cannot get into a TCU game without spending at least $100.
And like I said, I will admit here on Can I Get a Podcast, as Jeffrey Cooperstein and I, Chris Gross, are ranking our top 5 college quarterbacks, this is 100% biased because this was the time I was becoming aware as a TCU football fan. And I remember, man, it was a big game in Fort Worth. It would have been either 2009, I want to say, when they played Utah.
Yeah.
And that was a ranked game.
I think I was there.
Man, who would have ever thought TCU would have done anything like that? And you have to put some of this on Gary Patterson, but Andy Dalton coming in his senior season, setting a school record in completion percentage. And look here, now this may have been before the forward pass was invented, but you had Sammy Baugh, Davey O'Brien.
I think they were allowed to throw it forward.
Yeah, they were. They've had some pretty good quarterbacks in their time.
No, I mean, the Davey O'Brien Award is for the best college quarterback.
And that was back in the 30s when they were actually winning national championships. But Andy Dalton single-handedly brought TCU to a Power 5 conference where now if they're not thriving right now, they are right on the very edge.
No, TCU is absolutely thriving in the Big 12. They made the championship game last year. They split the title with Baylor. What year was that? The Bryce Petty year,
2014.
No, TCU is in a really good spot right now. It sucks that they lost Chris Del Conte to Texas.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to stop their momentum. TCU is in a great spot.
And TCU football will always do good things as long as you have Gary Patterson. And, dude, Gary Patterson probably bought part of his lifetime contract with TCU. Not that he actually has one, but as long as he wants to be there, he'll be there.
As long as Gary Patterson wants to coach in Fort Worth, he's coaching.
Because of that Rose Bowl season. And that really put TCU on the national stage. Now, they had done good things, had some BCS trips and BCS wins the years before. But when you get to a New Year's game, dude, I remember stopping down for that game. That was like the first time, really, I had just been accepted to go to TCU, stopping down, watching that game. Andy Dalton, you cannot overstate the impact he had for TCU and the future of, really, the school. There was a brief like couple months where they looked like they were going to the Big East.
Yes,
and I remember excited for the basketball opponents we were going to see coming in. But when A&M and Missouri bounced and TCU was one of the guys going in, I said, you have to make this move. And this move would not have been made without Andy Dalton, what he did for his 4 years, and especially capping it off with that undefeated season.
You know what? I really like that pick of yours. I think that's very nice.
I am a big Kenny Hill fan. I like Trevon Boykin.
Kenny Trill.
For what he did in college. Don't like his off-the-field stuff, so that kind of taints it a little bit. But Andy Dalton will forever be in my heart, the greatest TCU player of all time.
LT might have something to say about that.
Yeah, but see, I never got to watch LT play.
We never watched LT. LT was in the late 90s, and I think he was the only notable TCU alumni before Dalton.
In recent times, yes. Yeah. Like, you had Bob Lilly, especially here locally, who went on to become a Cowboy. But yes, so there are our top five. Do you remember yours?
Sam Bradford, Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Lamar Jackson, and Vince.
So yours capping it off with Vince. And I think we did have three the same. So my 5-1, Johnny Manziel, Marcus Mariota, Vince Young, Tim Tebow, Andy Dalton, top five college quarterbacks that we got to witness. So
you did say before the show you were going to have three.
We did, and I knew it, and I got the three right. So, Jeffrey, that is our top five college quarterbacks there. We'll close things out like we always do. We are going to close things out with the 24-second shot clock. And for those of you who are new to the pod, how this works is we have 24 seconds at the end of each show to riff on whatever we want. But it's 24 seconds, and when that 24 seconds ends, you're done. You're done. So, Jeffrey, I'm going to go first here on our 24-second shot clock. Watching the Rangers last night, and Rangers have picked up a couple wins over the Orioles. I remember coming into this season thinking there was a high likelihood this was going to be a 100-loss team. And now with like 50 games left, they have to lose like 30-something of those for this to be a 100-loss team. It's not been a fun team to watch the entire year, but this has been a surprisingly good season for the Rangers, especially for what we thought coming.
I mean, I don't know if you can call it good, but
based on what we thought coming in,
it's better. Yeah,
yes,
it's better. They still have a lot to work on. My 24-second shot clock was also going to be about the Rangers, so I'll just get right into that. They did a really good job at the trade deadline, getting those arms from Pittsburgh and from Arizona. The Rangers restacked the farm a little bit. It's pretty exciting what they have going on down there. It's a lot better than it was before the deadline. And I'm excited to see what the Rangers have in store for the next 3 or 4 years, even if you aren't.
I'm excited about the future just because they have a lot of young guys. The only thing that sucks about that is it's the future. It's not like you have guys banging on the door in AAA. I mean, these are guys like in high A and class A that we are hoping for the future.
Well, the guy they got from Pittsburgh is in AA. And, I mean, he might, you know, make a September call-up next year. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
By the way, shout out to Grant for our topic for today's show. He is a minor league guru, by the way. If you have any questions regarding Texas Rangers minor league baseball, tweet him at OG Show.
We may have to get him on the pod to talk a little.
Dude, whenever. Let's do it.
Minor league. Fan of that.
I see you didn't find my burner account.
I haven't found it yet. Still working on it.
Okay.
But as we're talking about burner accounts, Jeffrey, why don't you throw your Twitter handle out there for the people?
My Twitter is at jcoopjr27, and that's all social media.
All social media.
All of it.
Including Snapchat?
Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
MySpace,
Bumble.
Okay.
I don't think you can do that on Bumble, but
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I am at Chris's Gross, KRISISGROSS. That's on Twitter, so follow me there. Follow Jeffrey. Let us know what you think of the podcast. As always, this is going to wrap it up for this edition. But can I get a podcast? You can find it however you intake your podcast. If you want to go online, visit KESN1033.com. Click the featured audio tab at the top and just click on Can I Get a Podcast. This episode, previous episodes will all be there. Also, on Apple Podcasts, just head search Can I Get a Podcast and you will see us right there. So, Jeffrey, that's going to do it for another edition of Can I Get a Podcast. This was a fun one, man.
Dude, this was really fun. I really like that topic. Let's hope we can come up with something next week.
Or get Grant to come up with
Or we'll get Grant to come up with another one.
Yes.
He might be our unofficial official producer.
Thanks to Grant for the topic today. Thank you to my previous radio teacher, Mr. Deering, for the 24-second shot clock idea. And that's going to do it. We will talk to you next week for another edition of Can I Get a Podcast?
Okay, thanks.